Welcome back, humanoids, to Season 4, Episode 6 of Bell to Bell with Robert Blaze. I am your host, Professor Jeremy Vollmer, and joining us now, Robert Blaze.
Oh, yeah, got a snicker out of me there, Professor. Hello, wrestling fans. So do the humanoids, by the way, considering today's title and list and who we got on this list today. Hey, I just want to say something, man. I don't know, man. I'm just kind of kicking out of things here. We just talked a little bit off air. I think one of my problems might be I might be backed up, man. I haven't had Melanie over since this corona, you know.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of just standing back at 6 foot and social distancing, you know, wearing my mask when I do go out. Man, no Melanie, no foot job. Anything else, you know, I can't do it. I'm just being responsible. So I might be backed up a little bit, but that might be the problem. But anyway, we're going to have a good podcast.
I understand it completely because not only am I backed up, I actually got dumped because of this shit because I can't travel.
Oh, that's right, man. Yeah. You was doing a long distance thing.
Yep.
More than a 6 foot thing.
You know, me, I just had a heart attack a year and a half ago, so I'm a little leery about getting this shit. I mean, I should be fine, because, I mean, that just means my arteries are blocked, not that my heart was damaged, but still, it hits your respiratory system, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really have room to play around with that.
So with that said, hopefully everyone else out there is being responsible and wearing your mask when you do go out, and also practicing social distancing when you're out and about. Hopefully our wrestling fans that enjoy this podcast are doing good, man. Putting them out there as long as we can, right?
Yep, I certainly hope so. Yeah, I watched a lot of Bockwinkel, Heenan, and Stevens this week getting ready for this episode. So if I come off a little meaner than usual, it's just because of what I've been watching.
That's just the Silver Scorpion and you coming out. Mm-hmm. That's what we'll say.
That's kind of it. Those three guys were fucking money on a microphone. And you know what? You watch them wrestle. Those two guys are great wrestlers, but they wrestle like such chicken shits when they have an actual match. Oh, it is just so good. It really is. Yeah.
And I appreciate you sending me that link to the San Francisco tapings. I watched Piper.
Oh.
That's what you sent me, yeah. And there was a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
You sent me 1978, I think, from San Francisco.
And Piper, he just fucks with the guy for like 3 minutes before the match starts.
Yeah.
I've never really seen this. See, the guys in the 70s, I think, were just better at ring psychology. In general. Because, you know, I've been watching a lot of these old matches like that. Never once does a guy come out and call his upcoming competition a bitch. Or things along that line. Harley Race, all those guys, they come out and they talk about what a great competitor the person they're about to wrestle is. You know, what a hard ass, you know, now, but I'm the champion, so I'm just that much better than you.
That much better, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I started bringing this up last week. I did this on a speech for a college course of communication I was taking, and we talked about Dory Funk last week. One of the things I did during my speech, and I told you about his gunslinger site he had earlier on, when early in the infancy of the internet or whatever, someone was doing a promo down there in Texas, and they started off with, "Shut up, you stupid idiots." And Dory Sr. says, stop, cut the tape right down. We can't be calling our fans stupid idiots. Anyway, Dory went on to explain during this little thing about how to cut a promo. Of course, this was written probably in the early 2000s, but he's reflecting back probably to what, the, you know, mid 60s or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you know, here's the two things you don't do. Of course, times do change. Calling the fans idiots and putting the fans down on a promo because you want to get them in the building. Yeah. Not necessarily the way it has to be when you're in a ring, but also he was talking about, and don't put your opponent down. Build him up so when you win, it means something, you know. And that's what people, I think, sometimes if you call them yellow or a sissy or a pussy or whatever, you got to build them up. And some of these guys were the best at doing that. Like you said, Piper just comes out and, you know, hey, you might be tough, but I'm a little bit tougher. You know, I'm the better, you know. Anyway, there's a lot on that with that Piper and Stevens and Bockwinkel stuff, because you don't think of them maybe until maybe early 80s. Maybe first time I see Piper, like 83-ish, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When he's overworked for Crockett, so... There's a lot of good wrestling out there if you look for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And YouTube, I never even thought to check YouTube for Roy Shire stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, you found some good stuff.
Yeah. Man. They got stuff from Portland on there, too, which, of course, Piper did this Portland, Washington, California run. That's kind of where he came from.
So, anyway, let's talk about this week's show.
Yes.
We're going to be doing an AWA. So, we kind of jumped around there. Getting warmed up here, but yeah, we're doing AWA this week. But I hope people have enjoyed pre-NWA and last week was NWA. If you're just joining us this week, go back and listen to those two podcasts. I really thought that NWA podcast was really good. The professor here has been giving us a history lesson, sending me a lot of notes, giving me some research and stuff, and we've been working together behind the scenes, of course, to pull us together. And I'm telling you, man, some of the fans' feedback I've gotten has been nothing but positive about how, you know, we're really bringing to light some of the names from the past and keeping them alive on this podcast, and also the history of the sport of professional wrestling. Basically, you just give them a history lesson, man. It's been awesome lately. So go back and check out, if you haven't already done so, the pre-NWA show and then also the NWA show. And, man, I have to say it. My head, maybe that's why I'm a little bit loopy right now. My head, that chair shot last week kind of got me at the end, you know.
Well, so, look, we can't sell a product we don't believe in.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I believe in that damn chair you hit me with. It's real, damn it.
Yeah. And I figure we can sell chairs. You know what else I'm hoping we can sell?
What?
This week's episode is brought to you by El Cabon Guitars. When you absolutely positively have to crack somebody's skull, El Cabon Guitars.
Man, I hope I'm not on the receiving end of one of these by the best podcast, but I got a feeling.
Well, you know, but anyhow, I think maybe we've gone round and round on this. Let's discuss the AWA, shall we?
Yes, we shall. First champ was Vern Gagne. Last champ, Larry Zbysko. Who held it the most and the longest?
Well, that's gonna be Grandpa Vern again. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And for the shortest time, three different guys held the title for about 7 days. And that was Vern, go figure.
Mm-hmm.
The Mighty Igor and Dick the Bruiser held it for a week at one time. So those three were the ones that held it for the shortest amount of time.
I don't think guys like Crusher and Dick the Bruiser were the kind of guys you put the title on. I just, right. You know, I got that feeling, you know. So the AWA's World Championship was created when Vern Gagne challenged Pat O'Connor, who was the NWA champion, to a match, gave him 90 days. He declared him the first AWA champion, gave him 90 days to defend the title, or he was just going to take it for himself. So that's how Vern became the first AWA champion.
And I'm glad you explained that, because there was a little bit of controversy there with people saying, oh, Pat O'Connor. And I had to keep reading into that to make sure I understood it to be correctly how he actually did it, because he gave him the 90 days, and if he didn't, then Vern was basically going to be the champion, which was the plan all along.
Yes.
Good.
Well,
good.
Look, I mean, Vern, so what he had the Minneapolis territory as part of the NWA with Wally Carbo and Tony Stetcher. Wally Carbo and Tony Stetcher started it, and that's Joe Stetcher's brother.
Okay.
And when Tony sold out, I guess that's when Vern bought in, and so it was an NWA member for a long time. And in 1960, Vern and Carbo kept pushing to get a title shot, and they just couldn't quite get there. So he declared independence and created the AWA.
Yeah, and it became a pretty great territory. It lasted quite a long time, too, as we'll discuss here.
Yeah.
Some of the cities they did Minneapolis, they did Milwaukee, Chicago, Omaha, Winnipeg. I know when I was up in Canada, a couple of the guys that worked out there was telling me, you know, they grew up on AWA because they was getting it back in Winnipeg when they was, you know, boys my age, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the time when I was watching Memphis. Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, San Francisco, Phoenix, and throughout the Midwest region, I'm sure they had a bunch of small tank towns that they did, you know, and house show towns that they did as well. Good
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of guys and girls came working through there, you know, through the years.
Oh, yeah.
They had a lot of top tier talent. And I know back when we was talking, I think last week, if not off the air, maybe on, but we were talking about, you know, back in the magazines when you got the After magazines every month. You know, the AWA was listed. You had your NWA and your WWF, but you always had an AWA, and it was one of the big three, you know, with their champions,
yep.
whoever they were throughout the early to, you know, late 60s, all the way through until they shut down. But yeah, you always had those rankings, and those guys had their pictures on the covers and inside the magazine as well. So it wasn't like it was a third tier, you know, of the talent or anything, some Bush League. They were well recognized and well respected. The American Wrestling Alliance was.
Oh yeah, there's
Association,
a big,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, there's a big chunk of the 60s and 70s where AWA and NWA were the two big companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So those were the two world titles. Now, of course, the WWF starts to pull out and pull ahead of everybody, and we'll get into that as we go here. But let's go ahead and hit a couple honorable mentions as far as the AWA title goes.
Okay, I'll go first. For world champion, I have to go with none other than Jerry the King Lawler. Lawler won the title May 9th, 1988, held it for 256 days. He beat Curt Hennig, but then it was eventually it was stripped of him and it was vacated. And we'll talk about vacated. I am vacated. I think that's the first time the title was vacated in AWA. Shout out right there. But Lawler, man, you know, I think it took a long time from when I was watching back in the early 80s, we'll say 82, 83, 84, thinking, you know, oh, man, Jerry Lawler. Because, you know, we're still watching a lot of Memphis back then. And myself and my friends and stuff, we're thinking he's going to be a champion one day. He's going to be a champion one day. Of course, that finally came in 88. Mm-hmm. And everyone around here in this territory and stuff was real happy for the king, even though I live, you know, 8-10 hours from Memphis. But, you know, that's the TV we got, and we're really happy to see, you know, Jerry Lawler getting his just due, if you will, you know, having a championship belt that, you know, he's Southern champion for so long, and all the other titles they had down through their Southeastern and all that. And King of Memphis, of course, and selling that place out week after week after week. Jerry Lawler was, you know, he was always over. He's a good showman, whether he worked as a babyface or as a heel. And it was just time that he got the title, I guess. You know, he worked it enough. And I know he had some really good matches with Bockwinkel. I know there's one on YouTube I've seen, not here recently, but I know it's really, really good. Of course, I have a little history of Lawler myself, just a very professional history at that, because I got to work with him at Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And a complete gentleman, spoke to him before the match, just getting there and listen, kid, it'll all be good, you know, kind of thing. And after a match, you know, word of thanks and go about your business, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but I was really honored because that's someone I grew up watching, you know, and here I am in the ring, you could say, with the biggest star in Tennessee, or we was doing the East Tennessee versus the West Tennessee deal, and I was representing Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He was representing the USWA or whatever. But he's a former AWA champion, nonetheless, and I got to be in a ring with him. Slide one in over on him, you know, with a 1-2-3 on a roll-up. That's the way it was booked.
Yeah.
But my hat's off to Jerry the King Lawler, man, because I grew up watching him. And I wish, you know, I was talking last week, too, about having an opportunity to work in Memphis. I'd like to went out there and actually worked a program with him for, you know, 8 weeks or throughout a 2 or 3 month run there, if he had, you know, thought enough of me to put me on top with him or something. I don't know if that ever been the case. But nonetheless, I did get my one day of working with him and slid over on him. And for that, my hat's off. And that's why he's on the honorable mention for me, that he's not one of the top five, but he is on the honorable mention list.
Yeah. And that Southern title, that was the AWA Southern title, correct?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Sir. Yes.
So that was, I mean, that was one of the primary singles titles in Memphis. Can't really find much to back this up, but it's worth mentioning because it's Otto Vons from Austria who had a catch promotion in Austria. Now, the reason this guy stands out to me, and I'm having trouble finding anything to back it up, but listening to one of Jim Cornette's podcasts with Brian Last, they basically said that this guy basically just paid to get the AWA title for a bit.
Okay.
And it would, you know, it would have come during that period where Vern was struggling and trying not to sell his that giant piece of property he had in Minneapolis or in Minnesota. So I could totally see somebody going like, hey, I'll give you this much if you make me world champion. And you wouldn't even think about it. Just, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
Here's the belt. You know, make sure you spell Ganya correctly. Okay.
There you go. Yeah, sign it over. But yeah, Otto, he ran those big tournaments over there in Germany. I never went on there, but I know a couple people have where they basically perform in the same town for like 6 weeks at a time and just under a big top, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The guys live out in, they stay out in like RVs and rented campers and things like that right there on the grounds. Excuse me. And every night they have the circus of stars coming out. Now you go around the ring, and then each night is like basically a big 6 week tournament. And I know they go Hamburg, and I know they go a couple other towns. I don't know them because I haven't been there. Excuse me. But I know he was a huge star over in Germany, and I guess worldwide too, because I'm sure he went to Japan. And then with this title here, I'm just curious. I didn't want to put you on a spot there, but I'm curious, did he defend that any here in the U.S., or did he take it back to Germany, or do you have any more history on that? Just curious.
You know what? I don't. I'm still trying to get some info on it. So
I'm
what
just
I'll,
wondering.
Yeah,
I bet he took it back, is what I'm thinking.
Well, I'm thinking, yeah, I think he had it probably in Europe and maybe Asia. I don't know. I don't remember how long he had it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, man. He would have probably just taken it back to do the circus, Circus of Champions, if you will. And probably kept it for however long they agreed on it, and then either brought it back or had one of the guys drop it to him over there, you know,
yeah,
to get it back to Vern. So, yeah, all right, man, Otto Vons. Had correspondence with him a couple of times when I was in my career younger. I sent some photos over and stuff like that. Never actually got an opportunity to go over and work though. So I don't know. I've heard good and bad. That would have been experience for me at that point, you know.
Yeah, but that's wrestling, right? I mean, everybody. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I was wanting to go. If I could have went, believe me, I would have.
Oh, yeah.
I just, the interest just wasn't on both of our ends, wasn't as, you know, enough to keep pursuing other than a few correspondence letters, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Through snail mail and photos, not even a video, you know, so. And of course, that goes with word of mouth. You have to know someone that's working there usually. And at that time, I didn't. I ended up knowing a couple guys that worked there, but I didn't know them at that time. So,
anyway. Yeah. Well, and that would have been kind of cool because, like, you get to really experience kind of like the carny roots of pro wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. An actual traveling show. You know, I could see how that'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, those are our honorable mentions. We want to do a couple special mentions real quick. Because we would be remiss not to mention the fact that Hulk Hogan actually had two wins and title switches over Nick Bockwinkel. Only one of them's recognized, and the other one's reversed immediately.
Yeah. And I know originally when we come up this list, we were just kind of, you know, BSing around off the air one day as to what, you know, who, by the way, who do we got next coming weeks? And we had Hogan on this list as number five. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we need to work him in on here in some way. And anyways, that's why he's got such a special mention. He is Hulk Hogan. I think the whole deal, too, is he left over some T-shirt profits, if I'm not mistaken. He wanted some more money off the T-shirts, and Vern wanted some more money off T-shirts, and then pretty much the rest of history because he went to WWF and it's, you know, hey, you know what? You don't want me having this title. You know, you want me dropping it back to Bockwinkel. You want to keep stripping me of it or whatever. I'll take my business elsewhere. And I think he made the right decision.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, what'd you say here? The exchange was for a majority of Hogan's merch sales. Well, you know, I think Hogan come out pretty good on a T-shirt deal.
Yeah. Well, I guess what Vern wanted was not just the majority of his T-shirt sales. He wanted most of his Japan money, too.
Yeah, that's what you put on here. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah.
So he was he under contract and he was trying to make money off of Hogan while he went there for X amount of dollars per week? He was supposed to give him a kickback of 15% or 20%, or
that's the way I'm guessing it is that he worked for Vern and Vern farmed him out probably to Japan.
Yeah.
And so, you know, back in those days, your booker booked you in different territories as well. You know.
Yeah.
That's part of where that term booker came from. So they could farm you out to somebody else. Well, I imagine what was going on was Vern's going, hey, you know, I'll put the title on you, but you're going to have to give me, you know, I'm just going to throw a number out, 60% of your Japan money and 60% of your T-shirt sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, fuck that. I mean, Hulk Hogan was already becoming the biggest thing on the planet as far as wrestling was.
Right.
You know, he'd already been in Rocky. He was breaking away. Like he was taking off as the guy already. You know, and Vern just believed in promoting wrestlers, you know, like he'd hire powerhouse guys, but he's not putting the title on them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He was a little bit on the last of that, I guess the foresight, he didn't have the foresight to see, maybe he knew what that, I think they had a big show in 86 or whatever it was, they tried to the big promotion they did. I'm drawing a blank to be honest with you, but I think he may be the last one to say, you know, yeah, I should have done this when I had the chance. And I think Greg Gagne on one of those round tables even says, you know, hey, if we just would have, you know, just would have had enough, I don't know what the word is, but not be such a hard ass, I guess, to understand times are changing and big cable companies going to be taking over and here's your chance to sell out and make a lot of money versus just going under and not making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, well, having a foresight, I guess.
You know, changing your ways.
Yeah. Old school versus, you know, something new's coming.
Well, and that's the thing is that McMahon could see it.
Yeah.
And he could see like, hey, here's a guy, we put a rocket, you know, put a rocket on his back and he's going to be what carries us to being a national company.
Yeah.
Everybody else was just kind of dicking around with the idea. And McMahon's the one going, nah, fuck you guys. I actually know how to do this. I know what it's going to take.
And as you put here in the notes, I think it says, That was the wedge right there. Yep. That was the wedge between the Trample, the AWA. Hogan was the man to, you know, transitioned over.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, Vince had the foresight. Vern didn't. There's the wedge that he needed. And the rest is history, basically.
You know? Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you got to look. When Hogan goes, McMahon gets Mean Gene, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Dr. D. David Schultz, Jesse Ventura, pulls a chunk of people away from Vern. Now, the shitty part of that is then he immediately starts running shows in Vern's territory with Vern's guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when McMahon complains about Eric Bischoff rating him, I'm just like, fuck you, pal. You know?
Yeah.
I wonder where he got that idea from.
Yeah. The vacated, the title, as we mentioned, has been vacated. It was vacated January 20th. 1989. It was vacated again December 12th, 1990. So I am vacated. You're over at least a couple of times out there. One of them, my man Lawler, I guess, when he got stripped, I'm not sure. Or even when Hogan got stripped, I'm not sure. But anyway, I do know this. Your cousin deactivated, won the title January 12th, 1991. So I am vacated and deactivated out there getting over on us, Jeremy, once again.
That's it. Yeah. Surprising for a guy I've never seen. He sure turns up a lot in the title picture of these companies. Yeah,
I was thinking that, man. I was thinking, I've got to see this account. So if you're not, go ahead and follow him. I am vacated. It's a pretty good account about pro wrestling and pro wrestling history. And I've enjoyed it quite a bit. I don't know who the hell it is, but they're doing a hell of a job on that account on our pages. I don't know next week if, I'm sure it will. I don't know WWF and WWE coming up next week, but this week in AWA, he showed up in the end. He showed up in the pre-NWA. He showed up in the NWA. He's probably over there in Japan somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he's now showed up in the AWA on us. So whoever the hell you are, keep getting over.
All right. So before we get into their top five, we'll just do a couple points about the AWA. Again, it was based in Minneapolis. It existed from 1960 to 1991. So it had a strong 20-year run out of that 31 years at least.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
Yeah. During its heyday, Vern Gagne and Wally Carbo ran it. Their feature was, in their title scene, wrestlers.
Yeah. Strong technical wrestlers, man.
Yeah.
And that got over. I mean, that's what was selling. The billboard still said wrestling. This week, Anchor FM. We did talk about that probably because that's who's helping us. That's who we're going through on this podcast, correctly?
Yes, it is.
Correct, rather? Okay. Tell me a little bit about it.
Volume levels aside, that's what I had to say about Anchor FM.
Okay. Good deal. Well, I'm glad to be a part of it, man. Worked out pretty well for these. This is episode 6 of season 4, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. So we're doing all right with them.
We are.
With that said, I'd like to plug something real quick, too, if you don't care. I'm going to plug my Collar and Elbow site, okay? It's collarandelbowbrand.com. It's T-shirts and just a whole bunch of different things. It's wrestling passion meet street fashion, from toboggans and hats and again, T-shirts. I got some really nice collar and elbow T-shirts. If you'd like to get 10% off your order, use the code BLAZE, B-L-A-Z-E, all capital letters. You can go to tinyurl.com/BBCollar, B-B-C-O-L-L-A-R. So it's tinyurl.com/BBCollar. That'll take you to the collar and elbow site. And it's like I said, it's wrestling passion meets street fashion. They got some really cool stuff there. I usually wear about probably 3 or 4 days a week. I wear a collar and elbow shirt that I have. I've probably got 5 different ones I wear. One of them's like the old Pro Wrestling Illustrated book, but it says collar and elbow in the same laid out. It's red. It's really nice. But again, if you use tinyurl.com/BBCollar, take you there, visit the site, see if you like something. If you want to get 10% off the order, use the code word BLAZE, B-L-A-Z-E, and I get a little bit of kickback, and I appreciate that very much. I think you'll dig some of the stuff they've got on there. If you like professional wrestling designs, and I know they got the BLAZE on there, but I'm talking, they've got all kinds of other designs. Good Brothers Inc. and just a whole bunch of, you know, good people's involved in it. Luke Gallows, Now Snow, and some really good people are involved with them. Check out their page, man.
A great place. I'm definitely going to buy some shirts from there. I haven't yet, but I'm definitely going to. This is the 5 most consequential AWA champions. And number 5.
Okay. Larry Zbyszko, because you mentioned the humanoids earlier and the spuds and the potato heads.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Zbyszko. two title reigns for a total of 666 days. I'm looking at your notes here, so I'm going to steal them from you real quickly. Zbyszko won a battle royal, last eliminated Tom Zink to win the vacant championship, and I'll let you go from there for some things. Yeah, and so, I'll have a little story about Mr. Zbyszko.
Oh, sure. So I'm guessing I am vacated, was stripped of the title before this battle royal.
Okay.
But, yeah, so Larry had a couple runs at the AWA where he, you know, he'd go away and then come back. And then at the end, the reason I'm going to call him one of the most consequential is that you could see that the AWA was really spiraling around the drain. Anybody that Vern put the title on that was worth a shit was just going to get snapped up by the WWF at this point.
Yeah.
The reason that Zbyszko becomes consequential in this is that Larry came back for family reasons. Larry was Vern's son-in-law. And when you can't trust anybody else, you put the title on family or yourself.
Yeah, there you go.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that's because you know, I mean, if you're owner of the company, you know you're not going anywhere, so the title's safe with you.
Right.
And, you know, this is a period of time. I mean, there's rumors that Vern offered the Iron Sheik $100,000 to break Hulk Hogan's leg and bring bring the WWF title to him at the AWA, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was some underhanded shit going on here. Now, the other reason I like to put Larry in here is that this guy got so much heat from fucking Bruno Sammartino during his short tenure in the WWF that he dined out on it the rest of his career.
Yeah, living legend. That's living it. Legend killer. You know,
yep.
The living legend, though. He took that title from his mentor. He beat him, and he, you know, hell. He said, now I'm the living legend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's heat, man. Still that your is. Mentor's gimmick.
Yep. No, that'll carry you a long ways.
Yeah. And he was a tremendous worker, decent body, not overly huge, but had that wrestler's body. Man, could he talk, though?
Yeah.
He could talk. When I met him, he was WCW commentator, of course. And so that's why I was leading was a talk. Zbyszko could talk. I was in a match, a six-man, so it's either a tag or a six-man tag. I can't remember which. Honestly, can't recall what it was, but I do recall this. It would have had to have been a six-man tag. Let me just put that out there. I'm going to backtrack. It could have even been a tag. Either way. It was against these guys I really liked a whole lot, had nothing but respect for. But it was Steve Regal and Dave Taylor, John LeBlanc all of a sudden, super kick, spit it out.
Oh, Chris Adams.
Chris Adams, yeah, because I know, okay, so there's some heat between Regal and Adams. So Regal and Dave Taylor were good friends, but I don't think they was the same type of Englishman that they just didn't get along. So I'm over there for a couple other guys who I can't recall. But anyway, we're in a match, and basically Regal would come up to me beforehand because it's going to be a match for about 9 minutes. And they were going to basically short arm, what's his name? Shit. Chris Adams. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to give him a whole lot in the ring. Well, I was with two other guys, but they're supposed to just basically do a squash. That's what it amounted to. But Regal come to me beforehand because I'd worked with all them guys, and they didn't really hang around, like Seth Adams, that much, but hang around Finley some. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when I worked with those guys, they always gave me a lot for whatever reason, out of respect or just because they knew I could work or whatever. So Regal comes to me at night and says, he goes, Bobby, have a real short arm tonight. He goes, when you get in, get right back out. So it's really funny. So when a match took place, basically they're glomming someone. I won't mention names. I do remember two guys I was doing some TVs with that time. But anyway, they was getting the crap beat out. Boom, bada, boom, bada, boom. They go to tag, right? They throw them over and they tag me in. But as soon as I come in, I grab one of them, like side grab Regal. He'd say, shoot me off sunset. And I'd do a sunset. And then he'd say, tag. And I'd tag one of the other guys back in real quick. And they just start beating the hell out of him again. So every time I got in, they would give me a spot, either Taylor, and I didn't work. And I had worked with, I had nothing against Adams. I had worked with him before, but I knew he wasn't going to give me anything because they were going over strong.
Yeah.
So I said, I ain't worried about that. Regal and Taylor was one I was worried about because they was going to make me look good. And so long story short, man, every time I tagged in a match, I was going over, click, 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 you know, sunset flip here, back elbow there, you know, body slam, tag out real quick, getting something hot so I look good. But when I was out, of course, they're getting a heck beat out. They're getting a heck beat out every time. And I'm in there reaching, you know, with my arm, but I'm not really wanting to tag, of course. So I'm short arming like, you know, don't even try to get the fuck out of the ring, pal. So in that time, every time they'd come over, I might turn around, look out to the audience or whatever, just, you know, doing what I was doing with the ring. Well, unbeknownst to me, because, you know, I can't hear the announcers or anything. But, I, of course, after the match, I thanked Taylor and Regal and put them over huge, of course. There's the Thursday Night Thunder. So the monitors are back there, and you know, boys can hear stuff that's going to monitor and watching the show and this and that. So I don't see Zbyszko that night, but I see him the next day at the we're actually on the same flight. I think we're flying out of Texas. Anyway, one of the Armstrongs already told me in the back, they're like, man, if you get a chance, you need to thank Zbyszko. He puts you over the whole time during the commentary, man. He goes, every time them guys were in, you know, he was jobbing them out. And it was like, Bobby Blaze this. Every time Bobby Blaze, he's just putting you over the whole time. He knew what was going on. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. So I think it was Scotty Armstrong that told me that. Anyway, the next day I see him at the airport early in the morning, you know, we're getting your coffees, trying to get your flights and this and that. And I just said, hey, man, I heard you really put me over on a telecast last night or, you know, program. And he said, oh, yeah. He goes, oh, it was easy to see what's going on, you know. Just being professional, Bobby, just being professional. And he put it over, like, real nonchalantly. But he knew what was going on, too. I mean, you know, Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles could have seen what was going on if they was watching that match. It's just really funny. Didn't mean to go all the way around the world there just across the sidewalk. But Zbyszko was always funny and always real polite and really professional. And I'm glad he didn't bury me on that, you know, when he's doing a commentary during the match. But old school and smart like that, he knew what was going on. So he just went with it about how the other guys, if they just leave Bobby in there, they'd have won the match, you know, just putting it over big time against the English guys, you know. And again, it's really funny too for me in the ring because, one, I'm getting to look good, but also because I see what they're doing to, and I never had a problem with them, but they didn't like Chris Adams. And I don't know why I couldn't remember his name earlier. I had really a couple good matches with him. But they were short-arming him, too. They would hardly let him tag in. And he'd back up, and they'd smack his back and tag in real quick. I mean, it was just pretty funny just being in a ring like that, seeing a little fun behind-the-scenes stuff like that. Yeah. But also to know that Zbyszko was being a true professional on a microphone as well, at least getting my character over when he could have been burying me, you know.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. You know, I never even really considered that. I guess it'd be real easy for a color guy or a play-by-play guy to fuck over somebody in the ring. I could see, you know, I never even really thought about that because, you know, everybody is still kind of working their own angle at all times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's my Larry Zbyszko story. So, anyway. Yeah, I think it's time to move on, probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go on to number four, which is going to be the Lariat Stan Hansen.
AWA champion, one title reign of 181 days. This week's book is The Last Outlaw by Stan Hansen. Folks, I'm going to tell you, it's one heck of a book. I've got it on Kindle, and I know we got a lot more to say about Stan Hansen. I'm just going to go ahead and put this plug in here real quick, yeah. Professor. If you use tinyurl.com/BB, Stan Hansen, that'll be a shortcut to The Last Outlaw by Stan Hansen. And I'll tell you, it's one heck of a book. Go on Amazon and order it. Just use the tinyurl.com/BB Stan Hansen, and the show will get a little bit of kickback out of that, too, and we appreciate it very much. I know I'm going to let the professor say quite a few things here concerning Stan Hansen, then I'm going to read just a small excerpt out of the book, if you don't mind. How's that?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, because, you know, and I think as we get to the end of this, there may be something in here that's more of a rumor than fact. So Stan Hansen defeated Rick Martel for the AWA Championship. He was there for about a year. He went over to Japan. I guess the idea was that he was going to go defend the title in Japan, but Vern wanted him to drop the title to Nick Bockwinkel. So according to the stories, Stan Hansen calls Baba up and says, hey, is my deal still good if I come back without the title? And Baba tells him no. So Stan jumps on a plane and flies to Japan.
Yep.
With the title.
And I think he worked about 6 months over there with the title.
I believe so, yeah.
There's some controversy about the way Stan, you know, the belt was taken care of at the end. He was supposed to return the belt. And I'm going to read just a small excerpt from his book, The Last Outlaw. And it talks about, you know, he was working a program for Nick and what AWA wanted and what Vern wanted and what he had wished for. Again, like you said, he took the title to Japan. Having said that, this is in quotes, having said that, I wasn't like a lot of guys who thought the promoters were out to screw them. I respected the fact that they invested money to promote talent and they had a right to a good return on their investment. I had to find a balance between my welfare and a promoter's making a fair return. I always knew I was going to return the belt. So when I returned to Mississippi from Japan in August, I called FedEx and arranged for a pickup. Now, here's where it gets interesting, folks. There are many rumors about what I did to the old belt before I returned it. I pounded it into a small heap of metal. I shot it full of holes with a shotgun. Truth is, I didn't intentionally do anything to it. I had an old era 1950 tractor sitting on my property. It had two big wheels in the back, two small wheels in the front. It just so happened that while I was waiting for the FedEx truck to come to my house, I was driving around on that tractor, just enjoying the belt for one last time. Somehow, the belt slipped from my waist and fell under the tires of the tractor. Before I could apply the brakes, the tractor ran over the belt. Not just once, but four times. Weird things happen sometimes. So it fell off Stan's waist. Now you know the truth of the old AWA belt. It fell off his waist, and the old 1950 tractor ran over it four times. He said the old AWA belt had been around for a long time, and as championship belts go, it was quite large. It was also dinged up quite a bit. He learned something else about the title belt. The officer had a newer belt to give Nick and when he was going to beat him, which is exactly what they did. So anyway, he just talks about, you know, being involved in a confrontation with a promoter would greatly added to my reputation of being an outlaw and a nonconformist. I was happy to be labeled an outlaw. So anyway, there's a little excerpt from that book. Again, it's at tinyurl.com/BB Stan Hansen. And that's our book of the week. I'm warning Jeremy and myself going to start a book club, maybe give out a little excerpt from the book and rate it. But I highly rate this book. I don't know what the cost is on Kindle or on Amazon, but I'll tell you what, if you're a wrestling fan or a Stan Hansen fan, get the book. It's five big stars, I'll tell you that right now. I like that story.
No, that's a great story because the rumor version of the story is he ran over it with a pickup truck, and obviously that's right. Not true. Yeah.
That was what I had heard too. Something else about that book, he puts, and I spoke to Stan Hansen. I wish those pictures on my old computer somewhere where I went to see him at one of his rare appearances. I talked to him about this in person. It really made my day too. He talks about guys getting in a ring and locking up and who could push who around and stuff. And he said that Steve Williams over, of course, about how tough he was in the ring to, you know, you had to really make him move. But he said one guy he couldn't make move unless he wanted to move, and that was Joe Malenko. And I heard Malenko had put Steve Williams got to make him move a little bit. You know, you go in my direction. But Stan Hansen, I remember Stan Joe and Dean both talking about, you know, how tough Stan Hansen was and watched the lariat and all those things when I was back in training and stuff and through the years. But when I read that, he really put over Joe Malenko about how what a phenomenal worker he was. But he also talked about what a good shooter he was and how he saw him stretch guys in training. And also he wouldn't go if you didn't want him to go. When I asked Stan Hansen that in person, he said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah. He goes, you couldn't get Joe to move anywhere he didn't want to go. He put his body where he wanted to, and your body went where he wanted it to go. And I think that just, you know, says a lot, probably going back to my training too, you know, the mentors I had as trainers when I was coming up through the ranks in pro wrestling. So I just want to share that too. He puts over Joe Malenko, you know, so.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Well, anybody who doesn't put over the Malenkos doesn't really know what the fuck they're talking about, probably.
Man, he talks about him and Brody and him and Abby. And just this book, really, if you like Japanese wrestling, I'll tell you this. This is a very thick book. I'm not sure what the amount of pages it is, but I tell you, it's got a deep, deep history of the New Japan, because he started off with New Japan, mm-hmm. And it also has a deep history when he went to All Japan and when he jumped over there, and how him and Brody and how he got over all those years. Talks about the conditioning he did over there. Also, it talks that one of the forwards, there are two different forwards, and one is by Terry Funk, who broke him in. And really puts over Stan Hansen, of course, because he wrote the foreword to the book and helped him get into business and stuff. It's really interesting how much respect Stan Hansen had for the business. And he had a 27-year run in Japan. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a lot right there, too.
Well, he is
on our list. You know?
Yeah, well, and he was probably the top gaijin wrestler in Japan, right? I mean,
he talks about that, yep.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Now, if you guys ever want to really see something vicious, get on YouTube and go look up Stan Hansen Lariat, and I found a couple supercuts of him knocking fuckers' heads off.
I think Mishawa is the worst of it. He kills Mishawa on a couple of those.
Oh, Jesus.
If you type in anything else, I know it's Stan Hansen. That like you said, he's just taking people's heads off, but I think Mishawa gets the worst of it on a couple of them.
Oh, yeah. Now, Bobby, I know that you hated taking clotheslines.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, when you go watch a guy who does a lariat version of the clothesline, when you see guys start whacking each other with clotheslines like repeatedly in matches, you're just gonna be like, well, no, that fucker would be down, man. That guy would be out. You know,
yeah,
it does change.
You watch Hansen do it. You watch Hansen do it, and them fuckers are not getting up. That's what a clothesline's meant to be.
Yeah.
You know, that's the lariat.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, he just, well, first, I guess it's, he's blind as a bat, I guess is really the reason. And so when he swings for the fences.
Yep.
And I mean, if you're in his fucking way, man, you're paying the price.
Yeah,
you are paying the price.
Man.
Yeah,
that's some good stuff there, man. So we got Hansen on the list. Maybe time to move on.
It is time to move on. Let's go to number three. Probably one of my top two favorites in this company right here. Probably a lot of people's favorite, quite honestly.
Yeah, probably.
We have second generation superstar Curt Hennig.
Yeah, man, what a champ, too. What a performer, a wrestler, athlete. Went on to become, of course, Mr. Perfect. I mean, what's that say, you know?
Yeah.
But Curt Hennig here in the AWA, he had one title reign. He had it for 373 days. He had a 60-minute match, then turns heel in a follow-up match using a roll of dimes. I want you to tell me that because you always enjoy telling me that. Tell me how much of a heel Zbyszko was when this worked out. I know you love that story. Tell it to our fans.
Yeah. Well, this is like, I think the match, the 60-minute match between Hennig and Bockwinkel might be the first Broadway I remember.
Okay.
Because I remember it was like New Year's Eve was the night I watched the match. I was over at my cousin's house, and he had one of those old school big screen TVs.
Yeah.
And just the week before we watched this, he had shot the middle of the TV screen with a .22 because he was fucking around and shouldn't have been. But we're watching this match on one of those big projection TVs, and it's Bockwinkel and Hennig. And for me, Hennig at this time was still Scott Hall's tag team partner. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you know, like when you first found out Bret Hart was world champion, you're like, what, the guy who used to tag with Neidhart?
Right.
You know, that same kind of thought. And this match changed my view on Hennig because he goes 60 minutes with Bockwinkel, which is no small feat. I don't think these guys did the same move twice at any point in this match.
Yeah.
But they were both baby faces at the time. So, you know, these guys were stomping the shit out of each other, but not really doing anything too dirty, just wrestling, you know. And I mean, like every move you can name was probably in this match. Then you get to the follow-up match, which I don't remember how much later it was, but it was right here in California at Daly City. And Hennig's wrestling Bockwinkel, and all of a sudden Zbyszko comes out to ringside. And everybody's just like, well, what the fuck's Zbyszko doing out here? And he hands Hennig a roll of dimes for a fist pack, and Hennig bops Bockwinkel with it, and you see dimes go flying. He gets the pin. They award him the title, but they immediately held it up because Zbyszko interfered. Now, the AWA Rules Committee decided later that, nope, there's no proof of interference. So, Curt Hennig got the title.
And a great champion, too, man. Yep. Great physique, could always talk, and there wasn't. I don't think there's anything he couldn't do in a ring. And I saw some footage this week. Of course, it was a little bit later on in his career in his footage, but I said it, and I swear, I don't think anyone, and I mean anyone, took bumps the way Curt Hennig did in that ring. I mean, just from a simple chop to someone kicking the back of his leg, just the smallest of that, he turned it into the most incredible, perfect bumps that you can take, man. It was wild. Curt Hennig was just a hell of an athlete, a hell of a wrestler, a hell of a performer, you know, a hell of a champion, obviously, for the AWA. He put the title on him. So, great deal there. Great deal.
Yeah, and that's going to say something because, again, Vern didn't put the title on you unless you were a hell of a wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, his dad was obviously Larry the Axe Hennig. So, I mean, they were an AWA family, of course, out of Robbinsdale, where every wrestler came from for about 30 years there.
Yeah, seemed like it. Yeah, the Minnesota crew, man, I swear. You get down there at them Disney tapings, or Universal tapings. When I was in WCW, they did record at Disney. When I got there, it was at Universal Studios. You'd been a big, huge studio, and everyone just kind of segregated themselves. You hung out with, you know, who you mostly roomed with or wrestled with or traveled with in your little cliques, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was always the Minnesota boys were over there. There's a bunch of guys, just a shitload of guys, you know. There was the off Minnesota. Then it'd be the Florida boys. Everyone, you know, had wrestled, come through the Florida circuit. You know, it's just really funny. All the Japanese guys, pretty much all stayed with the Japanese guys. Mexican guys, all stayed with the Mexican guys. You know, so it's pretty cool though, because there are a lot of those guys. Like you said, you go down a list, and the Minnesota crew was just a huge group of guys over there. You know,
yeah.
So many of them had come through there. I got to work with Henning just one time. It was in a tag match. I think it was with Lenny Lane. I could be wrong on that, but I do recall the when they were doing the redneck gimmick.
West Texas Outlaws or whatever.
West Texas, thank you. And it was Curt Hennig and Bobby Jaggers Jr. and myself, and I'm pretty sure. And I said that Lenny Lane because I'm thinking maybe Lodi come out there with him too. I could be wrong on that, but that's why I'm drawing a blank. But the main thing was, is one of those deals where, again, I got to get in a ring, started something with Bobby real quick, tagged out, Kurt comes in, does something, and then I get to be in a ring with Kurt when my partner tags out. And it was just, you know, super fast, super light, just a real good experience to be in there with, you know. I do remember this too. It's going to be a really, like, sometimes you have TV and I'll say, you know, get a 6 minutes out there, count music, you know, or get a 6 minutes after music. And a lot of times, you know, you have time to play around or goof around or do something and have some fun with someone that you know how to work, you know, especially if they know you know how to work as well. But it's one of those matches, unlike the six-man tag I mentioned, it went like 9 minutes with the English guys. This one here, we had like probably 6 minutes, and by the time we got to the curtain, they're like, all right, you got 3 minutes, get in what you can. And by the time we hit the ring, and I locked up with Bobby Jr., like, man, we got 3 minutes. He goes, yeah, done something. Like I said, I tagged out, he tagged out, and Kurt come in. The guy tagged me back in. I'm in there with Kurt, and Kurt's going like, we got a minute, let's go. And then I tagged back out. It was one of those things, you didn't have time. You're professional enough to know this is our time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you can shine while you can shine and do what you can, but hell, you can't do everything in the world that you want to do in a match for TV. Anyway, it's just one of those things. I did get to share the ring with them. I wish it had been a lot longer. I could have done a program with them, but I wasn't in that league, man. He was in a league of his own. You know, he was up there at the main event guys where he should have been. Good for him. And good for him being an AWA world champion too.
Yeah, and that belt he carried was a nice looking belt.
That would have been the one that would, after the Stan destroyed one.
Yeah, right? It's
when they made the new one.
Yeah, so it wasn't the inmate belt, it was the one after.
That's going to bring us to our number two, I think, well, Professor, well, unless you have anything else to say. I'm sorry.
I actually had a question for you. Didn't you have another story about Curt Hennig?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You know what? Man, thank you for recalling. Man. Yes. Okay. So I've only been in WCW. I had my tryout match. I went to Disney for like 14 days and I come home and I was supposed to be off. So I'd been there probably 3 weeks, man. And I flew out to San Bernardino, California, where I was at. I was sitting in a locker room, had my match, changing this and that, whatever. There's a gym bag beside me. No idea who it is, because a lot of times you know who you're sitting by, who you're hanging out with, this and that. This, not that situation. I'm just in a locker room. I sat down by myself. I remember this. Big Boss Man had been sitting beside me when I came in here earlier that evening. I do recall that, because Ray and I used to always talk to each other about motorcycles and hunting, just a whole bunch of different stuff that was of interest to us. But anyway, I come back and I'm sitting there and there's a bag beside me and it's got locks on it. Someone has locked this bag up. And next thing I know, Curt Hennig is standing there over me and he's looking down at the bag, goes, fuck, whatever he says, he's looking around. And I just look up, man, I make eye contact. I'm the only one in that area at this time. And his bag is right beside me. Like I said, it wasn't there earlier because I don't think he was dressing beside me, buddy, you know, nothing like that. And I'm just taking my gear off and I go, hey, man, I don't have anything to do with that. Because I'm automatically thinking, heat, man, I'm new here. And if he thinks I'm ribbing him, I'm dead meat, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, shit. But I said, hey, man, I just looked up. I'm sitting down. I said, hey, man, I have nothing to do with it. He goes, oh, I know who this guy is already, because I've got a long history of this guy, believe that. And this kind of picked his bag up and looked at it, and I was like, well, I think he knows it's not me, you know. He just puts it back down. So apparently he had to locate the bag, which ended up being beside me. So I'm like, oh, fuck, I could have been set up right there.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, thankfully. And Hennig immediately knew who it was. I'm almost positive that it was Mongo, if I'm not mistaken, and he had been off a couple of days. And anyway, I think Mongo is one pulling a rib on Hennig, But Henning was known for, you know, a bunch of ribs himself. So he had already either got Mongo or was going to get Mongo back. But I know this, he left the bag there and I, you know, went ahead and got dressed. Actually, I had come from the doctor's office too. I had to see a doctor that day prior to going back to where my clothes were. So anyway, about 30 minutes later, a guy from the building came in with bolt cutters and cut the thing off. But Henning didn't move. He stayed. He left his stuff there. And like, you know, I know who this guy is. And I'm pretty sure. And I had to fly home. That's the other thing. They put me on a red eye. I had an injury. That's why I had to fly home. That's why I was in a doctor's office. But anyway, I'm sure what I was supposed to do the rest of that loop out there in L.A. because I had flown in LAX and San Bernardino and shoot, we were supposed to do like three other towns. Anyway, I didn't do them, but I imagine somewhere on that road trip, Henning got even with either Mongo or whoever it was that actually pulled a rib on him by putting his putting big security locks on his gear bag, you know. So yeah, I'm glad you told me, reminded me to tell you that, because I thought, oh shit, I'm in trouble and I'm not doing anything, you know. I'm just sitting here trying to get I'm trying to get dressed so I can catch a red eye flight back to the East Coast, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Henning knew though. He knew it wasn't me. And I was like, oh man, that's cool, you know. And that's the thing too, very professional, you know. He didn't just, you know, like, you little fuck you, or did you see who done it, not like that. He had been around the business enough to know that I probably wouldn't have said anything if I did know, because, you know, it's not my business. But also, this guy's just keeping his mouth shut anyway, and he has nothing to do with it. So, yeah, he knew. And like I said, I'm sure he got vengeance when, you know, revenge or whatever, when he found out who it was. But I'm almost positive it's Mongo, and they all had their own thing going on. So I'm glad I wasn't part of that rib, man. So
yeah. Could you imagine, like, so that probably happened to somebody else in a similar situation, but the guy whose bag it was like Shawn Michaels, and that guy got this poor bastard his second week on the job.
Oh, yeah.
Would have got fired and probably beat up by, you know, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash afterwards. I mean, you could see how that could
happen.
Oh, yeah. You could see how that could go bad real easily. Yeah.
And I'm the kind of guy, I would have stood up and said, you know, I always thought, you know, be a man. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to fight him, want to confront him or anything. But I'd have stood up and said, hey, man, I told you I had nothing to do with it. And I didn't see anyone had done anything. And, you know, try to leave it at that. But he knew immediately, like, I didn't have any. As soon as he just said fuck or whatever, looked over, you know, he's like, this guy ain't got anything to do with fish, you know. So yeah. I was like, I could tell by the groove, you know. When I looked at him, I was like, hey, man, I ain't nothing to do with it. He's like, yeah, I know. I've got a history of this guy. I know it is, you know.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's cool, man. Because they had their own thing going on, you know. I never was much into ribbing people or being ribbed. I liked having fun on the road and stuff. But, man, you know, I never fucked with no one's bag. Didn't like anyone fucking with my bag. To this day, if it's not mine, I don't touch it, man. That's just the way I am. I figure if you want me to have something, you'll share it with me or give it to me, you know, or I'm buying it from you. Otherwise, I ain't going to fuck with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the way I want you to do the same for my shit, you know. Unless I'm sharing it with you or giving it to you, stay the fuck out of it. As long as it's not my last beer. Because I'll give that to you, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's just the way I was always brought up. So I'm glad I wasn't a part of that, being on the receiving end. Starting some shit I shouldn't have started, and also trying to finish it, because them guys were probably in a league of their own. Like Owen, I know he was known for you know, greatest ribs and stuff like that, and Henning was known to do some nasty ribs, and I see Mr. Fuji, they said he done some of the worst ribs, Fuji, but I'm just glad I wasn't around some of that stuff, because that's just not my character, man. I'm rather just, you know, mind my own business, do my own thing. So,
well, you know what, I'll do this and then we'll keep moving, but I was just watching a thing the other day, and it was a fairly recent interview with Lex Luger, and somebody asked him, like, hey, did you ever meet Fuji while you were at the WWF, and did you ever get hit by one of his ribs? I guess Fuji would just flat out piss on somebody's shoes, like under a table. Yeah.
Just I heard, like, that too.
What the?
Talking to you to be pissed on you.
Yeah, I was just, what the fuck, man, come on. How do you even respond to that, you know?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. All right, well, let's get on to our number two spot here. And for my money, not just one of the greatest AWA champions, but I think an argument could be made the greatest world champion anywhere. We're going to go with Nick Bockwinkel.
Yeah, what a choice right here. And I think we did early on in these podcasts, you know, I picked Ric Flair and you picked Nick Bockwinkel as the world's greatest champion of all time. And I tell you what, man, it's an easy sell for Nick Bockwinkel to be one of the greatest champions of all time in the world of professional wrestling, above everyone else. He's such a champion, man. And he had such a vocabulary that when he cut an interview or done a promo or done a promo and cut an interview, he spoke above everyone's head, but to the point that you understood what he meant and what he was going to do was very serious. Great body and great in-ring skills, man. I mean, second to none in-ring technical skills. And also, if he needed to, cheat a little bit or do a little couple heel things, he'd done it in such a way. It was just so smooth that you're almost like, wait a minute, what did he? He didn't have to do that, but he did it, you know, kind of thing. And also, you know, as we've talked off the air here, the AWA here is pretty straightforward. You heard a lot of these names over and over and over that we've talked about. Nick Bockwinkel held that title four times. I think, would you say, 2,990 days that he held that, that title. I've already mentioned what a technical wrestler he was. Man, it was great. I'll let you go ahead and say a few more things there, Professor, because I think the world of Nick Bockwinkel was a champion. And I'll tell you this, I mentioned my friend Frank Shanley last week when he'd come down and spend a couple of days and we'd watch wrestling. A couple winters ago, we watched, before this podcast started, so probably like 3 years ago, we'll say, he came down and we spent a day, we watching a lot of the old Memphis with Lawler, and we watched the Bockwinkel matches with Lawler. Just tremendous performer. Back then, I was like, man, Bockwinkel was a great champion. Well, then we started a podcast, and I realized when you started telling me some different things, so we worked it out to where, I had Flair and you had Bockwinkel, and rightfully so, et cetera, that you had me convinced. I was like, holy shit, when I watched all those matches of Bockwinkel, man, I was like, yeah, he could easily be the best in the world ever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciate that because I had to go back and really think about, wow, you know, he wasn't just the AWA champion. He was a great champion, man. His body of work stands by itself, everyone he got to work with.
Well, you know, so he was a second-generation guy, and his dad actually helped train Lou Fez. So Warren Bockwinkel, his dad, was a badass wrestler. So Nick Bockwinkel came by it honestly.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did the work, you know. I mean, when he wasn't practicing wrestling, he was reading a dictionary so he could piss off the audience.
Yeah.
You know? I know Tony Schiavone will tell you that he was the dumbest guy he ever met, but I bet you by the time Schiavone met him, Alzheimer's had already taken a toll on him, you know?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, because he was, I mean, you got to figure, he must have been 50 when he wrestled Henning.
Yeah.
So, you know, a handful of years later, he's in his 60s, and, you know, I'm sure he'd taken a crack on the head or two along the way as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the dimes got him.
Mm-hmm. Damn right. He got his first title reign in 1975 at the age of 40.
Man.
So, you know, they made him work for a while. Now, of course, by then, he'd been a multiple-time tag team champion with Ray Stevens. He feuded with guys like Billy Robinson, Dick the Bruiser, The Crusher, Tito Santana, Mad Dog Vachon, Jerry Lawler, Otto Fonz, Mr. Saito, Jim Brunzel, Greg Gagne, Vern Gagne, and, of course, the immortal Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, and you can double check this or fact check it, I think, didn't at one time they do, didn't he wrestle Harley Race and Bob Backlund too? Didn't they do at one time?
They did.
It was something, yeah.
Because they had those interpromotion title matches here.
I want to say it was in the early 80s, and I'm just going off of memory from it, and I'm sure I could look it up on YouTube and find it, maybe. But there's a picture in a magazine, and it had Bockwinkel, Backlund, and Harley Race. And I think they did a deal. If not in the U.S., I think they either tagged. I know there's Bockwinkel and Race in a tag match in Japan I've seen. Anyway, look that up out there because I think you'll find it really interesting. Hell, I might do that this evening myself, man. I'm pretty sure some matches from Japan and Bockwinkel and Race were on the same team. Yeah, and then I think there's also a match with Bockwinkel and Backlund, too. So double-check that.
Yeah, I just found, just doing a quick search, I just found a magazine cover that has the three of them together.
Okay, yeah. Was that about 80 or so?
What year was this? 79.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
I knew it did something.
You know what? I think maybe Bockwinkel and Backlund wrestle and Backlund and Race wrestle. Maybe something like that. Yeah, I'll have to look into it.
I think you're right.
But, you know, even Rick Martel got a match against Ric Flair, you know, a quote unquote, you know, unification match. Funny how those always ended in a double count out, isn't it?
I know, man.
Yeah.
Promoters, you know.
Yeah.
Working us, man.
Weirdest thing. You'd almost think it was fixed. Think it was predetermined. And see, and as far as like Bockwinkel, I think the first conversation you and I ever had on the telephone was Bockwinkel Flair talk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Bockwinkel, just like Flair, he can make anybody else look like $1 million. Now, Ric Flair kind of did it by having the same exact perfect match with anybody he could.
Yeah.
But Bockwinkel never wrestled the same match twice.
Right.
His always looked different because, again, it was just out-and-out technical proficiency, whereas Ric Flair was putting on a show.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I mean, neither one's better than the other, and I think, honestly, trying to argue or figure out who was the better of those two is an impossible thing to do. I'd just say that there's an argument that could be made for Bockwinkel.
I absolutely agree with you, and I appreciate you sharing that insight with me about that, because smartened me up pretty quick, because I grew up seeing a lot of Bockwinkel. Actually, I saw more Bockwinkel younger than I did Flair until I hit my probably mid-teens.
Yeah.
And I started seeing a lot more Ric Flair with the, like I said, Mid-Atlantic TV hitting our area. So, yeah, good stuff. Well, real quickly, Jeremy, let me just put this out there, because I know we'll get to our number one.
Yeah.
I'm going to promote my books real quick, guys. Listen, got a couple books out there. If you're new to the program, if you're old to the program, I'm sorry you're going to hear it. But if you're new to the program, let me just give you the rundown real quickly. Two books, they're both available on Amazon. Also got some ebooks available on Amazon. I won't talk about those right now. But my two books, if you want to get an actual copy of the book, the first book is called Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boostful Travel. If you'll use tinyurl.com/blazebook1, it'll take you right to the link. And if you purchase that book, the show will get a little bit of a kickback. And believe me, it's just a little bit, but every little bit helps. So Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boostful Travel is at tinyurl.com/blazebook1. My second book called I Kicked Out on Two, The Education of a Wrestler. If you go to tinyurl.com/blazebook2, that'll take you to that shortcut. It'll put you right to an Amazon page. And again, the show will get a little bit of kickback out of that purchase if you do. I'll get a smile on my face. Jeremy will get a little bit of a deposit in his Amazon affiliate account. And we appreciate you helping to help sponsor the show in some small way. And I think you'll enjoy the books. Many people have. Pin Me, Pay Me has over 100 different reviews and ratings, and I appreciate that. All up there above, around 4.0 and above. I kicked out on two. The Education Wrestler has about 20, 25, I'm not sure, reviews on it. Please, if you do read one of the books, whether you download it on Kindle using the free Kindle app, or again, you know, purchasing a book, please leave a review. Just leave a fair and honest review. That's all I ask. Because reviews do help authors sell books, and it gives me a little bit of money at the end of the month from my Amazon account. So we appreciate that very much. We're not here begging, borrowing, stealing yet. We're just asking you, hey, if you'd like to help the show out, you can go to Anchor FM. You know, there's a microphone there. Leave us a message there. You can also donate 99 cents or $4.99 a month. That'll help the show some too. Or if you purchase one of the books, again, the show will get a little bit of kickback out of that. And I appreciate it very much. And that's my spiel on that, because I know we're getting ready to go to number one. And with all this great talk, Jeremy, I'm pretty sure most people that's smart to the business now know.
Yeah, yeah. Wait. Let me. I want to do it.
Okay, you announce it.
Yeah. So our number one most consequential AWA world champion is Dr. X, Dick Beyer. All right, Dr. X.
Debbie Harry better be his damn manager. I know that.
I came up with this idea while looking at pictures of Debbie Harry. So
is that what it
was?
Okay. Yeah. And I think I Am Vacator or someone sent that picture in. I'm not sure who, but I tell you, it's like from the 1970s. Is that the LA Forum? And I think she got tights on, but I could have swore it was panties, but I could be wrong.
If, I think from the right light, it looks like she's not wearing anything.
Exactly. That's in my 50-year-old mind. Yep. But she's got the Dr. X t-shirt on, and so you're going to give him Dr. X Dick Byer, let him be the number one AWA World Heavyweight Champion.
Well, who else could it be? I mean, who else would be the AWA number one most consequential champion?
If we said it once on this program today, we've probably said it 100 times. Vern Gagne.
Vern Gagne. 10 title reigns, lasting 4,677 days.
Jeez.
Man. You know, we covered the story of how he became champion. You know, he gave Pat O'Connor 90 days to get in there and defend the title. That didn't happen. Vern Gagne named himself champion. You know, one of the things I noticed about the AWA is that if somebody bounced while they had the title, they gave it to whoever they thought was the next guy in line. They didn't do tournaments very often.
Yeah.
They just kind of handed it, you know, somebody leaves, you hand it to Nick Bockwinkel or Vern Gagne or whoever the next guy in line is. Vern was a hell of a wrestler.
Yeah.
I believe he wrestled in the Olympics in 48.
I was going to say, I think he's in 1948 Olympics.
Yeah.
That is correct.
You know, he took this company and made it like one of the two dominant companies in the country. You know, feuded with Gene Kaniski, Dr. Bill Miller, you know, Dr. X and Mr. M, obviously. Fritz Von Erich actually got a title here. The Crusher, Ray Stevens, Mad Dog Vachon, Larry Henning, Nick Bockwinkel. He also unified the Omaha version of the world title with the AWA title.
Okay.
It comes at a double whammy as far as getting the lineage back to the original world title as well.
Done excellently as a professor. I appreciate that. And, you know, there's so many guys, like I said earlier, the AWA is pretty much a straight list of people, you know, that we talked about today. There's a few other people that's on that list that had those titles early on through the years, and we ribbed around about Dr. X and some of the other guys, what have you. The fact is, you know, Vern built that company on his back, basically, like you said, you told the history of that, and he kept it all those years, and even when you talk about Zabisco, you keep it in the family, you know, kind of thing. But most people, and I imagine most of our fans, some of them may remember a little bit farther than I do or you do, but most of them probably going to remember those years of Vern and Bockwinkel holding the title probably more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Unless you got a special memory in your head, like you said, maybe about Curt Hennig being a champion or maybe I remember when Lawler got it and that's why I chose him. But so I'm sure there's a lot of guys at AWA that we didn't mention on that, but here's what we think were our top five, you know, and we hope you liked them. I know Jeremy here, he's a professor. He actually sends me some stuff. I send him some stuff. And then we just kind of put it together and make a program with it. And these last 3 weeks have been excellent, just in the history of professional wrestling. I think our fans have really appreciated, you know, some of the stuff we've talked about, the pre-NWA and NWA, now at the AWA. Next week, as far as we know, unless something does change, we're going to be doing the WWF/E. And I don't know. We'll hopefully get that into a 1 hour podcast or less. Jeremy, unless you have anything else to say, I'm going to go ahead and sign myself off. You got questions for me or anything?
I got a couple things I want to throw out here.
I know we have some sponsors. I was curious if I need to get off here or not.
No, you just hang out for a minute, but I do want to cover that I, you know, at one point the AWA title was unified with the WCWA title into the USWA title. And then Vern, like every other time he had gotten into a compact with other promoters, he fucked around and pulled out of that. But the USWA title was based on a shared lineage of the CWA, AWA, and WCWA, which was WCCW.
Okay.
So that was there. Yeah, Bobby, I feel like I'm letting our audience down a little bit.
How so?
Well, you know, I kind of teased the guitar thing at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Do you play guitar?
You know what? I funny you should ask. I played one song ever on a guitar. Dun, 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 dun. I could play Smoke in the Water, just that little riff right there. It's the only thing I ever learned on the guitar, man. Oh. Maybe if I had an El Cabong guitar, I could have learned better. I don't know, man.
You know, what's special about the El Cabong guitars is they're impossible to tune.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm tune deaf anyway,
probably. Yeah. You see, these guitars aren't for playing. They're for selling. You ever sold a guitar?
I got a feeling I'm fucking about to.
And bam.
Yeah.
There.
Okay, so anyway, I'm going to log off here. I want to say to all the wrestling fans out there for the Bell to Bell with Bobby Blaze podcast, thank you very much. Thank you, Professor. Fans, come back next week. We'll be here again. Take care of each other out there, man. Like I said, it's a cold world right now. That virus is like a cold boot in the ass trying to hit everyone with it. So wear your face mask, wash your hands, stay safe, stay strong. And until next week, I'm Bobby Blaze. Professor, go ahead and close us out, please.
Well, and like Bobby was saying, you know, you can pick your friends and you can pick your nose, but when you pick your friend's nose, you pick the nose of everybody your friends ever picked the nose of. So wear a finger condom as well. And with that, for myself, Professor Jeremy Vilmer, and Robert Blaze, to all you humanoids, we'll see you next week.